Welcome to the Disruptive Podcast. My name is Jamie, and we're here with another episode, and we're glad you're here with us. So, Scott, how are you doing today?
Well, it has been a very challenging month, I will just say. between the government shutdown, you know, which has been, you know, a crazy thing. We're not getting paid for telehealth, of course, is a big issue for us. And then it doesn't look like anybody wants to open the government back up.
No, that's correct. This is the longest government shutdown ever in history.
And I don't see it changing.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is.
I just got a text message. It was so funny because I get all these, you know, because I do contribute to people's campaigns. It, you know, we have to as a business to do that. But I just got this text message and I was reading it, and it was from a Republican who said, "We need to face the facts. We lost the VA 11 special election. We lost Arizona. We lost Texas. We lost the New York mayor's race. We lost the governor of Virginia, the governor of New Jersey." And basically they said the Democrats are far more likely to win the midterms. Mm-hmm. And so the Republicans know that the shutdown is the worst thing for them.
Right.
But yet they haven't brought any compromise. Like every single time they come back, and the only thing the Democrats have been asking is to revise the Affordable Care Act so that people's premiums don't double to quadruple.
Yeah.
And so instead, what they did was say, we're going to shut down we're going to cancel 10% of all the flights in the United States.
Right.
And now all that's doing is pissing more people off
at the highest travel time of the year.
Right. So I'm like, what? I don't get this. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, I don't know. It's just common sense to me.
For sure.
The Republicans are getting blamed for the shutdown, then why wouldn't the Republicans bring something to the table to get the government open?
Exactly. That would make a lot of sense, and that would make a lot of problems go away for a lot of people. Yeah. So, and because you can't fix it if you're not there.
All right. So, beyond just politics, here's what I spent yesterday afternoon with a bunch of people to talk about the strategic rollout of hospice. Mm-hmm. We are hospice certified, in case people didn't know. In South Carolina, we've made application to get a license in Georgia because we're already certified by Medicare. As soon as we get the license in Georgia, we can start billing for those services over there. So for any competitors who happen to be listening to this, guys, first of all, I want you to understand our goal is for your health to have a hospice so that we can put our patients on our hospice. We are not out there running around all over the world saying, hey, please give me your hospice patients. We're not banging on doctors' doors, hospital doors, or anything like that. If somebody calls us, we'll take them, but that's not our goal. Our goal is to take care of our patients.
Correct.
And so for those competitors who might get mad at us, you did this to yourself. Each month, we receive about 3 referrals from hospices out of 1,800 and something new patients referrals that we get every single month. 2 to 3 of them come from hospice because most hospices out there, almost all hospices out there, do not want to keep the primary care provider involved in the care of the patient once they go on hospice.
Right.
And they say they do all the time, but they don't. With the first time that nurse needs a medication or sees a change, she is calling her medical director. She is not calling the attending, which would be us.
Right.
So anyway, just for everybody to know, that's why we started hospice again. We have almost 800 patients on hospice services right now in our practice. Based on the number of homebound patients, which is somewhere around 20,000 homebound patients,
right,
statistically, 25% of those folks should be on hospice.
Wow.
So that is 5,000 patients.
That's a lot of patients.
We have 800. The reason? our, I believe, you know, I can't quantify this exactly, but our providers got tired of losing their patients, meaning the hospice came in and said, hey, don't go see these persons anymore. I mean, we had some hospices saying, oh, they're going to send you a private pay bill. Medicare won't pay for those services any longer. You have to only use us. There's a lot of misconfusion on hospice. As an example, last week, this was so crazy. I was sitting with an administrator of a facility, and I was telling her that, you know, as we roll out hospice, I said, this was in Georgia, and I said, mm-hmm. So we won't be here yet, but I said, here's what you should be asking for. Your hospice patients should be pretty sick. They can provide anywhere, I always say, 6 to 10 for a really sick patient, 6 to 10 hours of CNA care a week. Mm-hmm. And literally the administrator looked at me and she said, well, that's illegal, Scott. And I said, really? Where'd you hear that? I mean, that's what hospice is supposed to do. And she said, oh, all the hospices have told us that it is illegal for them to provide more than an hour to an hour and a half worth of care at a time to a patient. And they are limited to only 3 hours per week by the law. I was like, well, there's no law that says that. Wow. You know, what the only thing that you could get in trouble for would be, are you offering more stuff to a patient in order to, quote, entice them mm-hmm. to be on your hospice services? And listen, I've already been in, we were investigated for 7 years on that back in our Agape hospice days. And no one ever found that we were enticing people to sign up for hospice because we were going to give them more services than they were
right
deserving, you know. So what I want to talk to you today about, for the rest of the folks that are working for your health, is what are what's our strategic plan and how do we expect to roll out hospice in our organization? Mm-hmm. And what, why people would want to do that. So I do think we're going to get a lot more providers now who are really going to push hospice again. And I'm a big proponent, if nobody understands that, I'm a big proponent of hospice, always have been, because I think that people, and people meaning it, healthcare professionals as well as family members and patients, make bad decisions toward the end of life
right.
that are detrimental to these patients. And mm-hmm. we know that, you know, mom's dying, she falls and breaks her hip. And so we're putting her through major hip replacement surgery in the last 3 weeks of her life. Yeah, is that really the best thing to do?
Exactly. Yeah. That's there's so much miseducation out there and just things that aren't true. And, you know, as you've already alluded to, it's, you know, that you have to know. And if people don't know, they don't know, especially in a crisis.
Exactly. Yeah. So, sorry, I'm eating a muffin. I'm sitting around and it looked really good. My mouth's full, guys.
Listen, apologize. You got to eat, Scott.
So I do have a sweet tooth if people don't know that. So, strategic hospice plan then for our organization, and then really how do we go about making sure that people transitioned onto it. A couple of things that are really helpful for us. We have contracts with home care agencies across the state that will provide the CNA services for us.
Right.
We also have community health workers who are providing services for us. So a couple of the guiding principles behind what we're going to do. Remember, we are still in value-based. And so when somebody goes on hospice, then that means that the expense for that care that hospice is paid does go back against the allotment that Medicare has allowed for that patient. So what you have to look at is what's the condition of a patient who needs to be on hospice? And it's pretty simple. You just do the math. Medicare pays hospice approximately $6,000 a month for a patient. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get a little bit more, sometimes a little less, how long the patient's been on hospice. So we know that in order to make up, to have an allotment of $6,000 to pay the hospice, we are allocated by traditional Medicare $1,125 a month per risk point.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the government of the United States, CMS, has declared that a hospice patient to be appropriate for hospice in terms of a payment needs to have a RAF score of about a 4.
Right.
So 4, well, it'd actually be more than that. I'm sorry. It's a 5, guys. So 5 times $1,125 would put you shy of $6,000. So what the government is saying is that their expectation is for a patient to be on hospice, they should be at a risk score of a 5.
Right.
Now, they're not going to tell you that, but the financial incentives are tied to that. Mm. So a 5 is the number. It should be a 5 or higher. Now, I believe that to be true. We went back and looked at all of our patients that are going into our high-risk ACO next year. And so we look at all the patients who are 3 and above, and our average of 3 and above is a 4.66.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a pretty good high average for a patient, which means that those folks would definitely be somebody we may want to look, are they appropriate for hospice? Because that's the number the government has said the RAF score should be.
Right.
So what we did is we went back and said, okay, based on that, based on the intensity, we should be able to staff a patient based on that RAF score. Now, it doesn't kind of work tit for tat. A diagnosis code doesn't necessarily apply exactly to activities of daily living issues that a hospice CNA would look at, but I think it gets you close. For example, if I'm quadriplegic or I am functionally a quadriplegic, that gets me a pretty high risk score, then that means that I certainly need to have a lot more services provided for me.
Right.
So our model that we've done is basing anybody that's greater than a 5 is pretty sick on our scale.
Sure.
And we are saying that that person should be eligible for about 10 hours worth of CCM a month.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not CCM a month. I'm sorry. 10 hours. I'm sorry. I've been doing CCM all day. Would be about 10 hours of CNA care.
Right.
A month.
Right.
Now, we do not have, we are not going to have a position called CNA. CNA is a designation, and it's like a degree or a certification, but all of our people that are performing CNA duties will be community health workers. So all of our employees will be working for hospice, and they'll also be working for all of our facilitators, nurses, and community health workers will be working for both. They'll be working for hospice, and they'll be taking care of their regular patients as well as their hospice patients. So we kind of came up with a formula that says, okay, just roughly, I'll run through it, 5 hours. If you have a greater than 5 on a risk score, you'll get 10 hours. If you have a greater than 4 but less than 5, you might get 8 hours. Then you could go down to 6 and 4 hours a week of CNA care based on your RAF score. So it should be pretty easy for people to determine, well, this is how much we should be able to provide for you. Now, are there going to be exceptions? Absolutely. You know, because this, again, Medicare didn't put this in stone because they want you to use common sense. And they also don't want to restrict people too much for making sure they get the patient the care that they really needs to go to the patient. But remember, the goal of hospice for CMS, for Medicare services, and always has been, the reason they pay for hospice is because it reduces hospitalizations and it reduces overall cost in the last 6 months of life. So our strategy, again, for us is we want to reduce the cost of the patients in the last 6 months of life. It actually does usually makes patients better. If we can keep them out of the hospital, they end up having a better transition and a better death as well. So, you know, we always, in hospice, we do talk about having a good death. So how do we then make sure that we're strategically aligning the right people on hospice and getting them to those services? This is going to really be up to your care team. I make it very clear, as administrative people out here, I'm not going to diagnose patients. I'm not going to determine what those diagnosis codes are, and then I'm not going to tell you how to treat that patient. that really has to be the provider. And we have clinical team members that help to review and monitor and take a look that everybody's doing it correctly. But as an administrator, I'm leaving that up to you. Mm-hmm. I want you to admit the patients that need to be on hospice. I don't want you to admit those people who do not, or who, you know, and I am going to question every hospice patient who's a less than a five. Not right. that you can't put them on hospice, but I'm just going to say, hey, guys, let's look at this. Mm-hmm. So as an example, if you have less than a two and you're thinking about putting somebody on hospice, guys, you've missed something.
Yeah.
Let's go dig around and find the diagnosis. Maybe you need to run some labs. Maybe you need to run some testing to be sure that this person really needs these services. And did you really get that risk score objective? So somebody said, well, okay, how are we going to get all these people out there? So we need to have a strategy to go into assisted living for patients at home, for new patients. So here's the strategy. Pretty simple. Nurses have to do admissions on hospice patients. It takes a long time to do an admission, upward right. to 2 hours. If it's taking you more than 2 hours, guys, you may need to get a little more training. but I'm going to say it could take you 2 hours to admit somebody to hospice. Mm-hmm. We will pay a bonus of $150 to every nurse who does an admission.
Right.
And you can do it at any time. You can do it weekends, nights, whatever, off hours, in hours, you know, whenever you do it. But the reason I'm paying you that $150 is that's going to keep you from going to see another patient. So right. if you're a nurse out there, you could have gone to see someone else where you would have done CCM and you mm-hmm. would also have done your you would have done a telehealth visit and you would have been compensated in your incentive plan for that.
Now, is there a time limit on that, Scott? Like within 24 hours? Is it within 48 hours? Is there some type of time limit?
Nope. It's whenever you do it. Because here's the thing. Back in the day, good question, though. We used to incentivize people. You had to do it within a 24-hour period because we were trying to get people signed up on hospice faster. Today, the urgency is not there because, look, they're already our patient. You know, the right. urgency is, yes, we're going to give you some more caregiving hours, but our nurses are still already involved with those patients. It's not as detrimental that we get you on that fast to make sure we prevent your hospitalization or get you started so we can, I mean, it's just billing,
sure.
you know, and I'm not going to nickel and dime Medicare because again, we're in value based. The whole goal is hospice going to save us money. So I'm not in a sense of urgency in terms of that aspect of getting them admitted. So $150 to the nurse. Now, nurse practitioners, remember your nurses. Mm-hmm. If you go out and you want to spend your time doing that hospice admission, you're welcome to do that. It's just, you're probably going to take away from time that you could have done a bill. Like you could have billed six people in an hour for $600. You would have gotten a pretty good incentive on that. Are you better off doing that? Are you better doing your admission? You have to make that decision. But nurses, $150. Remember, I think it takes an RN. Maybe LPN can do it. I'm not going to question that. But whoever does the admission legally, I will then pay them the $150 for that admission.
Right.
That should be the incentive, right? That should be the incentive.
Sure.
To get people signed up. That's my strategic plan. It's pretty simple.
That's simple.
And pay people to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Yeah. So then the question would be, as a nurse, you know, I'm assigned 100 patients in the roughly. There's two nurses assigned to every nurse practitioner. So each nurse has about 100 patients. Why would mm-hmm. I want to sign my patients up for hospice? I have to learn the new software. I have to do more documentation. And here's why. One, you're going to get the $150 when you admit them. Mm-hmm. And then every time you see that patient, the hospice patient, if you do a telehealth assist on that patient, instead of getting just the credit that you normally would, you're actually going to get two times the credit on that patient because right. we're going to always assume while you're in the home, you're having to spend a little bit of extra time because you do have to document.
Sure.
And that means that now you're still going to bill CCM or care management. Now, what you'll do is if your care management is related to the primary care practice. So for example, I'm a nurse, I go out to see a patient, and I'm going to facilitate a visit with the in-person provider who is the attending, hospice attending. Mm-hmm. That person does not work for hospice. They work for house calls or for your health.
Right.
But they work for your health house call side. We're going to bill that visit as Part B. So as a nurse, everything I'm doing to facilitate that visit for the provider, I'm logging that in Clinny and then ultimately billing that to the Part B for my care management. That is an important part of making sure that we are managing and coordinating the care between the two. But I'm also a hospice nurse, so I'm going to do hospice documentation. I open up our software as well, Sky, then I'm going to be billing that to, I'm going to log that in Clinny as hospice care management, and that will be logged. So you get credit for it and you still get incentivized on it, but that's included in our daily rate for hospice. So we're not going to get any extra money for that, but we get the hospice reimbursement. So you'll be logging hospice hours and you'll be logging primary care hours. If you're going to facilitate a visit with a palliative provider, then you are going to be logging your care management in as hospice, which will be non-billed through the Medicare Part B, but it's included in the daily rate.
Right.
And I think that's pretty important for folks. You're doing everything in Clinny. You're still documenting all the visits in Athena, and then we'll be pulling over the documentation from Athena for visits directly into the WellSky software for hospice. But you will have to go do your care plans, and you'll have to set up a lot of your work as a nurse. You're going to have to set that up in the WellSky software, and you will have to know both. So if you want to start getting the $150 and you also want to get the double credit for telehealth assist because that's a hospice patient, then you need to learn the WellSky software. Mm-hmm. Somebody should be either contacting you, but you're welcome to reach out to your EDCSs and say, hey, I need to get trained. How do I do that? And there's a bunch of modules. I think there's like 20 modules. Each one's going to take you 20 minutes to do. So you're going to need to start studying that now.
Sure.
Because until you can admit a patient, you can't get the bonus. So that's my strategic plan.
Nice.
Do you want to convert patients that you currently have on hospice? You're welcome to do it. But you may decide not to. Somebody's got 10 days left to live and they've been on a Amedisys hospice or someone else. You don't need to convert them.
Right.
But if you have a patient and you're frustrated with that other hospice, you're welcome to convert them.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Up to you.
So let me ask you another question here, Scott. You know, that's all the medical part. That's all of the, you know, admission, all those things. And that's great. What about the other hospice services like chaplaincy and those things?
Yeah. So currently on each care group, we have two social workers, right?
Mm-hmm.
One is kind of an in-person and one is a social worker that does mostly ACPs with the doctor. Those are your social workers or social services people.
Right.
We have to have a licensed social worker, which we have a bunch, but you also can use anybody to do social services. Chaplaincy should be coordinated with the people's local people out there. We are hiring some chaplains that will actually be in the social service department. So the goal for your regions were to take, have two in-person, I think you have one in-person social services person for every care group.
Mm-hmm.
So in a region, you would want to make sure that some of those people are chaplains.
Right.
If you'd have an issue, I can teach you how to be a chaplain. If you're a good social worker, I can teach you how to be a chaplain.
Sure.
But really, with the way people's faith is now, you know, you have to... Most social workers could do this, or social services people could play that role, but you also really should be hooking them up to somebody who's more in depth with that faith, you know? So,
sure. Yeah.
So you can find, you want people to use their own pastors, right?
Yeah. If they're Catholic, they can contact their priest, you know, and different things like that, you know, or from the local parish there, you know, there's so many different ways to do that and accomplish that goal.
Exactly. So that's a pretty simple strategy. Now, what I will say, strategy with buildings is going to make it very easy for people too.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we're going to give, and when you're talking to a patient, you're going to be able to say, hey, Mrs. Smith, you're a risk score of a 5. So therefore, we can give you up to 10 hours of CCM a week.
Right.
Now, you'll have to go through and justify that with the, you know, within the software system itself and make sure that you have the care plan appropriate and all that. And you may find sometimes that somebody might not be appropriate for that many. But again, this is just a guiding factor. So let's just say we go back, and I actually did this. I went back through all of our palliative patients. Our average risk score was a 3.5, I think.
Right.
Of all of our palliative. But we had a lot of palliative patients that were still like a, well, less than a 1. I think there were, out of 2,200 palliative patients we had on our list, meaning they've been seen by one of our palliative providers.
Right.
350 of those had a risk score of less than 1. Not to point out somebody's failure, but they were probably patients that got seen one time and then could have died or went off of our service, went to a hospital or nursing home.
Sure.
And so I'm not criticizing that we just didn't do our job there, but it does mean that our average risk for our palliative patients is probably closer to a 4.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say we go in and we look at a facility and they have, for just rounding numbers, I'm going to say they have 20 patients on hospice in the building. And let's say their average risk score of those 20 patients is a 4.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to take 20 patients times 4 on the risk score, which would be 80. And then I'm going to multiply the 80 times 8 hours, because for a risk score of 4, I'm really going to give you 30 minutes of CCM time, or I mean 30 minutes of CNA care time a week.
Sure.
For every, I'm going to give, I'm going to actually give you 2 hours of, I'm sorry, I'm giving you 2 hours of CNA care per risk point.
Right.
So if I have a 4 on the risk point, I'm giving you 8 hours, so that's 2 hours. So you can literally take those 80 hours times 2, they get 160 hours of CNA care a week. That means that that's 4 full-time equivalent community health workers.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So the community health workers, 4 of them. If you are not a certified nursing assistant, you can do a training program through our education program, mm-hmm. which will qualify you to be a hospice caregiver.
Right.
You don't have to be certified. You have to be trained and you have to pass a test with us. If you are a former CNA or a nurse or a paramedic or a EMT, you can go through this training program. It is about 75 hours worth of study and you do have to take a test, but you can reach out to our education department and they'll have that ready for you.
Right.
All right. So got a building, 20 patients on hospice. You're going to automatically receive, then, or based on that risk score, you would get approximately 4 full-time equivalents. Then how many other people are in the building?
Mm-hmm.
Because you also have to look at, well, how many community health worker hours do I get based on that building? Our ratio is 1 to 100 patients. So I got 50 patients in the building. Then that means I get an extra 20 hours a week.
Right.
So I'm already getting 160. So now I'm getting 180. So you do have ability to add those community health worker hours into it. But rounding wise, with the 20 hospice patients, and let's just say there are 100 patients in the building, you're going to get roughly 4 plus maybe 5 FTEs in the building.
Mm-hmm.
So in that building, what I would probably do is put a full-time nurse, mm-hmm. an RN in the building. And she will be responsible for those 20 patients doing their regular visits and documentation, but she will also be responsible for all the other patients in the building. So we'll have a full-time RN. We'll have two community health workers a day, 7A to 7P. And remember, that means you come in a few minutes before 7, leave a few minutes after 7 because you still take your lunch breaks and
right.
you want to work a full 12-hour day. So you're going to get that. So when senior solutions advisors, executive directors of palliative care, as well as your executive directors of your regions or your groups, should be going out and sitting down now, this week, mm-hmm. with your facilities and letting them know what our staffing schedule is going to be, and are they interested in converting their patients? Because we will, if these are not our patients, meaning they're not on your help already,
right?
They need to, then the facility is going to have to reach out to the patient's family and make the suggestion if they want to switch them over.
Gotcha.
But what's going to happen is, you know, a facility is going to come and go, oh, I'm just going to give you the next time it, when somebody goes on hospice.
Mm-hmm.
If they do that, it could take us 6 months to a year before we can input our staffing model.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because you're going to staff on how many patients are on our service.
Yeah,
right.
That's great. Wow. I mean, it's pretty simple, Scott. It's pretty easy. It doesn't seem complicated.
Yeah, it really doesn't. So nurse practitioners, the one good thing for you is that you're still going to be able to see your patients. You're still billing Part D, documenting the Athena, except for our palliative nurse practitioners and our palliative physicians. And there's only like two or three of those. When they go and see a patient, let's say I go and as a palliative provider and I see a patient, I'm going to actually document that, I think, in Athena. Y'all clarify that. But we're going to bill it under the hospice Medicare number. Now, here's something that's really important. When a provider sees a patient, it doesn't matter if they're on hospice or not. They are going to get paid for that separately. Mm-hmm. The provider's visit is not included in the daily per diem for hospice.
Right.
But we're confused about that. A lot of people are confused about that. I've had people in other hospices to say, oh yeah, we don't bill for those visits. Well, they should be. If they're not billing for the provider visit, that is enticement.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a service for free, meaning I'm going to have a physician make a medical decision on your behalf, and I'm not going to bill for it. That's an issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do think people have to be real careful about that. And why am I not billing for it? Well, sometimes I will say hospices will a lot of times not bill for it because they're worried about their caps. They have a limit as to how much they can bill, you know, total each month based on the number of admissions they've had.
Right.
So I had somebody reach out to me this week and they said, well, Scott, we have a patient right now that's on hospice, not on ours, but on a different hospice. And they've been on hospice for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
I don't know how they've been on hospice for 5 years. I said, well, first of all, we should be evaluating that to determine if they are, and are we the people that were certifying them? It could be possible for somebody to be on hospice that long.
Sure.
But I would think we have to really look at that. The other, her question was, do we want to take this patient because that's going to be over the hospice cap? And I said, remember, the cap is an all-inclusive on all patients, you know, so it's not just individually aligned. But I would just have to say, yes, from a financial standpoint, maybe I don't want that person on our hospice, but this is, again, up to the provider. Right. Does the provider feel like they need to be on hospice? Do they want to continue to follow them? Do they want this patient to be associated with them? Then go ahead and put them on hospice, guys. I'm not going to tell you not to based on some money issues.
Right.
I was talking to billing and coding today, and I said, look, guys, I know they make a lot of recommendations. Hey, this person has got a bad health plan. We're not getting paid a lot, or they're not paying CCM. So you don't want to necessarily drive all the way to their house and only bill $40, like we said, for a Medicaid patient. But I never tell people you can't see Medicaid or you can't see United Healthcare, for example, because we get paid something for it. And I'm just not going to interfere with some relationship between the patient and their provider. The provider just knows that sometimes they may not get bonused or incentivized, you know, for those numbers. But I'm pleased that some people want to continue to take care of those patients. Now, how do we help the patient understand, hey, why don't you just change insurances? Well, that's the easiest thing to do, you know, to get a better payment structure for us. But I think it really has to be up to the provider. So providers, you ultimately make the decision about whether somebody goes on hospice. What are the qualifications? Do you believe that this patient has 6 months or less to live? Are they likely to die in the next 6 months?
Right. Yeah.
That's the condition.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's, you know, and there's some, there's obviously there's a kind of an art to making sure somebody's, you know, appropriate for hospice. And, but it's not rocket science either. You know, like you said, is it 6 months or less? Do you think that person, could you see them not being here in 6 months? And it's pretty cut and dry. And then if you, when you have your cancer diagnoses and, you know, people are, you know, maybe they have kidney disease and they're not doing, you know, a treatment anymore. There's all kinds of different ways, you know, and so yeah, that's, this sounds great, Scott.
Well, and the other interesting thing is, I was at a hospice conference this week, and you know, I haven't been to one in about 5 years. And so it was kind of like, oh my gosh, I'm getting back into it. But a lot of the things that concern hospice, the people that were at these conferences really bothered me a little bit. So, example was, patient, needs to have a procedure done, you know, and pretty much hospice pays for everything. I mean, it is, if you could have a hospice patient who fall, break their leg, they could go to the hospital and decide to have it fixed, and Medicare Part B would pay for that, and it doesn't come out of the hospice per diem. Mm-hmm. But other than that, and provider visits are always paid separately, even though you bill it under hospice. The rest of it really goes back to the hospice is going to pay for it. So medications, drugs, tests, labs, and stuff. But remember that a lot of this is not that expensive when you realize that hospice is getting paid $6,000 a month,
right,
for this care. So they gave an example of somebody who needed to have some little procedure that would have made them very comfortable, even radiation therapy, that it could be, we want to shrink the tumor just a little bit to make it easier for them to breathe or to make it just more comfortable for them. You know, while you think, oh, you call the hospital and it's going to be $5,000 bill, but you only have to pay Medicare allowable. Mm-hmm. So we do need always to check. And so it may cost you $1,000 to do that treatment. That may well be worth it to make that patient comfortable.
Sure.
I want to make sure that we're not worried so much about the bottom line, mm-hmm, that we're going to deny people the care. Same thing with therapy.
Sure.
Therapy helps people strengthen themselves. I told our team a while back, and it was a little misconstrued, but I said, guys, all of the therapy we do is palliative. Mm-hmm. Now, when I say all, 98% of it, my wife was on our therapy program, and she wasn't palliative. She was there to get aggressive treatment after she had her knee surgery, right? Mm-hmm. But she's a rarity in our practice. Yeah, so if you, if you're therapy services can really strengthen those patients. All of our therapy services are somewhat palliative in nature,
right,
meaning that we're not going to be as aggressive as everybody else. But if this can help your patient, I want them to have therapy. And for the general rule, here's what we're doing with our patients, because we don't have enough therapists.
Right.
If you have a patient that you think could really benefit from that, we're going to send a PTA or COTA to see that patient at their home once a week. In the beginning, first week or two, maybe they'll do two visits. They may do a little bit more, but for the most part, it's once a week. If they can really tolerate and do more, the PT or the OT can do other visits, either right, in person or through telehealth, facilitating those telehealths with a community health worker or a nurse or somebody else who's in the home, or even with one of the family members. So those all can be really effective tools for us. But we do want them to know that they can have therapy services and continue therapy, because if we can make them stronger and better, you know, then that's going to be important for them. And again, the goal is keep them out of the hospital.
Sure. Absolutely. And that's been the mission since we just did a podcast on that. That is the mission of Your Health, is to keep people out of the hospital. And the hospice is the same. Keep them out of the hospital, you know, keep them comfortable, keep them at home with their family and enjoying their final days. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. So one of the questions that I pose to our hospice folks, and if we do have competitors listening in, maybe you can help me with this too, because I think this could be a standard of care. I said, you know, when you put a patient on hospice and they're in the community, you're going to pick up the phone and you're going to call in your region. You will have a home care coordinator, and that home care coordinator will be the one that will help you find your caregivers. Sure. So we've contracted with these home care services out there, and you're going to determine that this is how many hours that you could do a week. So we're going to look and say, hey, they're a risk score 4. We're going to give you 8 hours a week. And so here's the home care agencies, and you can coordinate how you provide that care. Now, we will do a care plan about the things that need to be done. So my question back to our team was, well, what if that person decides they want all 8 hours in the same day, so that the caregiver, you know, that can get out, do other things. And so we had some debate, and some people said, oh, well, you really got to justify it based on the activities of daily living and the need. And I said, yeah, but I think in the spirit of hospice, that yes, even if they need bathing and dressing, you know, 3 times a week, the family says, I'm willing to do it some if you're willing to help us out here. And I think it's just going to be a matter of how you do the plan of care. But I think that's going to be an appropriate use of it. The other I want people to be aware of is that we can get paid for respite care. That rate is close to, if not above, $500 a day if we can put you in a skilled facility. The facility has to be Medicare certified, but doesn't have to have RN coverage for respite care 24 hours a day. We can do GIP. We also have a new program, and it's called Guide, that's out, that allows for up to $2,500 in respite care a year for a patient with Alzheimer's or dementia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, they can't be in a facility already, so you can't go and say, hey, can I just pay the facility rate? But if they got really bad and needed to go to the hospice inpatient unit or to a skilled facility, yeah, we could use that $2,500 at $250 a day is what they'll pay. So that could get you 10 days in skilled along with GIP and respite. You could probably end up with 20 days in a skilled facility and not any out-of-pocket expense to the family or the patient.
Wow. That's phenomenal. That's such a help and such an incredible thing. As a, you know, having my dad who died of dementia, died of Alzheimer's, you know, those kind of resources are just invaluable.
Yeah. And think how many times, again, if we're thinking about Medicare's mission and goal with hospice was to keep people out of the hospital and to keep a lot of aggressive treatment at the end of the life. So how better to do that is to keep the caregivers healthy. So what can we do to relieve that caregiver? So if during that 6 months on hospice, they end up, you know, with 20 days, that's almost, you know, a month, right, of inpatient somewhere, because between all of those payment sources, you could do another, you know, respite. You could do multiple times for the patient. I think we could really do a lot to really enhance the model of being able to take care of these patients and reduce the cost. Remembering, again, I go back to Medicare's model is that we want to make sure that your risk score is high enough to compensate the providers taking care of those patients with that allotment with those patients. So again, that 5 risk score is where Medicare has said a hospice patient should generally be.
Right. That makes sense.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
Scott, this has been great. This is exciting. This is another, you know, getting back into this but doing it a little even more creative than traditional, a traditional hospice company, being able to combine this with primary care and a primary care physician and provider, you know, and the way you're partnering with this, you know, CNA, services and the different things. And this is pretty amazing.
I think that the to me, I've never been more excited about hospice, you know, than I am right now, just because it for the first time ever, we're going to see how hospice gets truly integrated in the primary care groups out there, and doing this in lots of different facilities out there, I think is going to be helpful too. So just to recap, the strategic plan really mm-hmm. is incentivize our nurses to admit patients when necessary, incentivize the facilities in a way that's going to help take care of their patients better. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it is, by providing the adequate amount of care for our hospice patients so that it's not a burden to those assisted living and nursing homes because somebody goes on hospice. And it will coordinate the care between hospice and primary care because the attendings will still remain in control. You know, you'll have your hospice medical director and you'll have your hospice palliative providers out there to assist you, but we really want to keep the primary care provider empowered to do what they know is best for their patient and to have that continuity of care across the continuum until the end of death.
Sure. Absolutely. This is great, Scott. Well, thanks so much for sharing this great news. And, you know, for those, your health employees, man, make this happen. And this is going to be a whole nother way to serve and to help people in the community.
Yeah, my anticipation is that by the end of the year, which is about 6 weeks away, we will have 800 patients on your health palliative hospice. Mm-hmm. And I think it's pretty reasonable to do just by looking at converting some buildings as well as just taking on the new patients. I think we write about 250 hospice orders a month. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in 3 months, that's 750, you know, right there. So it should be pretty easy for us to do. So good luck, guys, everywhere. If you they should have the incentive calculator updated in the next few days that will include hospice admissions and deaths. Oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you the best news, Jamie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me throw this out. So we're not hiring nurses just to be sitting around to be on call at night. Mm-hmm. And so what we're going to do, we are hiring daytime triage nurses in every region that will go out and do your deaths, and they can do admissions. Mm-hmm. Now, so for them, if you know, the question is, if you want to wait around and get the triage nurse to go do the admission, she gets 150, or do you as the nurse of the patient, do you go ahead and do it? I would encourage you to do that. But also at night, what we're going to do is people will be able to sign up if they're willing to be on call or not. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have as many people who want to be. And as a nurse, if you go out for a death visit, is generally what we send you out for, or for a critical visit mm-hmm. after 7 o'clock at night, you will get paid $300.
Oh, wow. Can I sign up?
Yeah. Well, here's what you can sign up. Non-nurses can also sign up, because a lot of times we get a call from a patient that or a patient's family, and they're scared to death. They don't know what to do. Patient's probably not dying.
Right.
So if our triage nurse finds that out, but they're in fear of that person being sent to the emergency room, we will send non-nurses out and we will pay you at half that rate. So if you do take call and you go out at night, you'll get paid $150. So sometimes we're going to send you out, and then the patient does happen to die, and we'll have to send the nurse out too. Sure. So we'll pay a little bit more, but that's okay. I think it's worth it, because our thought behind it is, why not incentivize the people who are out there working that want to make extra money mm-hmm. and let them have the opportunity to do it, rather than just hiring additional nurses that might be sitting around doing nothing, waiting on somebody to die.
Exactly.
You know, so
yeah, that's great.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
We hope it'll work.
Yeah. That's great. Well, Scott, thanks for this. And this is going to be exciting. We'll have to in the next month or so do a recap and see how this is going, and kind of recap this and see and kind of see the progress on this and how things are working.
I hope it goes well. And if not, y'all let us know if it's not working for you, if you got questions.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jamie. Y'all have a great weekend. Yep. And we look forward to a great month.
You too.
Thanks.
Thanks, Scott. At Your Health, the North Star is simple. keep people out of the hospital and close to the ones they love. Hospice isn't a last minute rescue. It's thoughtful, team-based care that honors the whole person and their family. If today sparked an idea or revealed a gap we can close together, reach out. Send Scott an email. Send him a message on Teams if you're in the Your Health ecosystem. Let's keep people home, comfortable, and cared for all the way to the end. Thanks so much for listening today. We appreciate you. Thanks for listening. Share this with a friend. Share this with a colleague. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good one.